Podemos começar? Podemos.
Sr. Presidente, muito obrigado
por nos ter dado esta
oportunidade. Sr. Presidente da Comissão, senhores membros desta Comissão, senhores deputados, muito obrigado por nos terem dado esta oportunidade de vos apresentar as nossas ideias sobre o assunto em causa nesta Comissão. Portanto, só uma pequena introdução sobre o que é a Oracle, o que é que nós fazemos. A Oracle é uma empresa de software e hardware, portanto, uma companhia de IT a nível mundial, portanto, uma multinacional, emprega cerca de 100 mil funcionários, um valor de mercado de 160 bilhões de dólares. Estamos presentes no dia-a-dia das vidas das pessoas, quer seja quando utilizam telemóveis ou quando acedem às vossas contas bancárias, lá por trás existe uma peça de Oracle a funcionar. O muito comum Java, que provavelmente já devem ter ouvido falar, neste momento é a propriedade da Oracle, que continuamos a desenvolver e a promover. Em Portugal somos uma empresa com cerca de 200 empregados, faturamos cerca de 100 milhões de dólares e a nossa estratégia fundamental assenta sobre desenvolver software e soluções baseadas em open standards. Okay? E para isso convidámos o nosso especialista nesta área, que tem corrido e tem feito o seu trabalho de divulgação de quais é que são as nossas ideias e qual é que é a base e os conceitos que estão por base do desenvolvimento e de todas as soluções que entregamos no mercado.
Muito obrigado. Eu ia dar a palavra, mas antes de mais dizer que estamos de facto neste grupo de trabalho sobre as normas abertas na administração pública e temos feito, digamos, diversas reuniões com universitários, com empresas e continuaremos a fazer esse trabalho e é com todo o prazer que, digamos, respondemos positivamente ao pedido da Oracle para estarmos aqui, pedindo desculpa por este pequeno atraso, mas... O plenário só agora terminou. I want to thank members of Oracle, particularly Mr. Trond Arne Undheim. And it's very important for us to discuss and debate with you these matters we are discussing, working in further legislation about the open standards. And, well, the floor is yours.
So, muito obrigado por inviting me, não falo muito português, so I apologize for this, but if it's any consolation for you, I'm Norwegian, so this is also not my my mother tongue, so I think it's fair. It's fair. We're very happy to be here, as Vitor said, particularly because the initiative that I understand you have taken in openness and interoperability and open standards is something that's very dear to our heart. The business that we are running is founded on similar ideas, and I will try to explain why they are important to us and why we think they indeed are important to you as well. So. The context of openness is a wide one. It's not just interoperability and standards, but there are other topics that are important, particularly that once a law or a policy goes into effect, it's very important that there are procurement consequences. So that's why I talk about the word openness and not just about interoperability. So the openness agenda also is important in terms of the consequences that your law will have on procurement of IT. The situation at Oracle is that we are very deeply engaged in standardization. This is a topic that takes a lot of time. We have, as you see, a lot of employees engaged, something like 400 employees around the world that are engaged in standardization. It's a long-term way to develop technology, and basing your technologies on standards is the most important insurance policy that our company and other companies' technologies can work together. And without that, we are all in trouble, because the IT environment these days is so complicated that no one player can assume a monopoly. Neither, of course, would you want any player to have this monopoly, but it's also completely unrealistic. So we have been presented here today as a big player in IT, but in many fields, we are fairly small. And in no way do we have near control over any given part of the market. In every case, we have to interoperate with other technologies and solutions. And even with our own technologies, because as technologies evolve, we need to be interoperable with our own solutions. So this is important. Open standards is in Oracle's DNA. When we were a tiny, tiny company, we were around the table discussing standards with other much bigger players. And we built our product, which at that time was only a database, upon the SQL standard. And that was the foundation of our success today. So it's important, and open standards are more and more important. The one other point I wanted to make in this context is that it's not just the openness of a standard that is important. It's actually whether it is being used. So it's no good to have a standard that's perfectly developed if nobody is using it. So if you hear people talk about standards, and they say, oh, these are open, but they're not actually used and implemented by the majority of market players or by many market players, it's not really an open and working standard. So point number two, the initiative you're taking fits in a European picture. Many other member states, and indeed around the world, many other countries are taking similar initiatives. This is not news to you. I understand it was mentioned in the two proposals that you have on the table. I work a lot directly with these member states and also with the European Commission and spend time with them. Their interoperability framework, as you may know, was just published in December. And it confirms the importance of interoperability across Europe. But more than that, these frameworks are now converging. And this is important, because interoperability is not something that can be done in isolation. The more countries that align on the similar types of ideas, the more interoperability we will have. My third point is that global IT standardization is characterized by various degrees of transparency. And the issue of royalty-free standards has achieved a big attention. It is very clear that royalty-free standards are likely to be more widely implemented by more players and in more products and to provide more interoperability. This is clear, and that's an important starting point. The caveat or the counterpoint, which is important to remember, is that most standard-setting organizations give a choice, and they have what's called RAND-based intellectual property policies. RAND stands for reasonable and non-discriminatory terms. And RAND can mean royalty-free, but it can also mean that you charge for including your technology in the standard. However, in practice, very few of the standards where we participate, and as you saw, we participate in hundreds of standards, in 107 standards organizations, very few of them indeed choose to charge royalties for the reason I mentioned before. It's a very big decision to start charging royalties, and in the software sector particularly, not a lot of players choose to do so, because it would limit the availability of the standard, and fewer people and fewer companies would implement them. However, we do support, as a company, both the idea and the right to be compensated for investments in technology. So that's important. Mm-hmm. And if those technologies are going to bear royalties, the very, very important thing is to know very early. So standardization can be a game where you are held up in the process. Let's say we're sitting around the table, and then very, very late in the process, when we have spent years developing something, somebody raises their hand and says, yeah, this is going to be very expensive for you. This is unfair. So we believe that as early as possible, when people sit down and make a standard, they should declare the terms and say, this is what we're going to do. We think we are going to charge for some of our intellectual property. And as long as you know this, then everyone is on an equal playing field. Now to the topic of open source. Open source is about availability of source code. So basically the way software is written under specific licensing terms. It is not the same as open standards. The relationship between open source and open standards is not so complicated, but it's very often confused. I will start with defining what we see as an open standard. So the first is that they are agreed upon and widely available and implementable. The second thing is that the process by which they are developed is transparent and open. The third is that they should be open to multiple implementation paradigms, such as open source, so that you don't favor one paradigm over another. And finally, the standards text should ideally be available at little or no cost. Although, if you are very, very fundamentalist on this criterion, you end up excluding almost 80% of the world's IT standards. Because this last point, for instance, in the formal ISO ITU system, they do charge for standards, including in the European system with Senelec. So being too strict on this last point would exclude some of those standards. So this is something to be aware of. Then just a quick note about our company's own views and investments in open source. We invest in open source to meet customer requirements and needs. There are customers who do require and want source code and want it, their software licensed this way. So we respond to that, as we always do. Any company that wants to survive responds to customers. And we are a leader in the area. We have technologies that can be licensed this way. However, we want to say that it is not a cure-all. Moving an entire infrastructure to open source may not solve all the problems in the world. So this is something to be aware of. But the most important thing in this context is that open source as such does not guarantee all of the things that an open standard guarantees. So the end result is this. Open source or not, the very, very important thing is that you follow open standards. In other words, if a government starts investing or any other client starts investing in open source, but in a particular version that does not implement open standards, then we are back in the same type of lock-in situation that governments have or another bigger clients have been in for a long time. So that's why we believe that it is open standards that answers governments' openness concerns, and that open source is kind of a side issue that is related to other aspects, but not necessarily to the aspects you want to address, I think, with your interoperability law. Just one example of a open standard that is maybe particularly relevant to parliaments and to citizens. Because many standards, you have to remember, are in kind of the background of IT. They have long and complicated names, and you only see them if you have to. But open document format happens to be a standard that is very much in the open. If you use, you know, a computer and are working on documents or have to read documents, you are faced with a document format. And there are many formats out there that are not open standards or that are almost open or have the characteristics of a de facto kind of standard, but they were never standardized and they were never shared, and all of the information behind it is not transparently available. ODF is a different story, and as you know, it now gets adopted by many governments around the world. We are just one of the market players who has a product in this space, and in fact, we didn't used to. Although our message on this point did not change, we were always a believer in the open document format, but now we happen to have a product as well. Because of our acquisition of Sun Microsystems, we have the open office product. So let me then move to another area that wasn't, I think, so much mentioned in your debates. I said that there are kind of two types of standards organizations. One is the formal world. So this is in Europe, CEN, CENELEC, and ETSI. So ETSI is, in principle, the telecommunications standards organization, but they now also do IT standards. And CEN, CENELEC does basically every other standard. Internationally, the main organization is ISO, the International Standardization Organization. But there is a whole other class and type of organizations. And as you saw, Oracle participates in 107 organizations. The formal world consists of only 45 international organizations and then, of course, national bodies. So that's the formal world. Four or five. I mean, ISO, ITU, JTC1, and then you have all the national organizations. But what is called in the IT industry fora and consortia, the example of those would be W3C, OASIS, IETF, IEEE. Those are some of the big ones. Many of these standards are what the internet is built on, and they are important. So I would encourage you to make sure that you are covering those standards in any initiative on interoperability. And by the way, if you do, you will join the group of governments in Europe who have seen this a long time ago and who go much further than the EU. The EU is now involved in a reform to recognize such standards, but they haven't accomplished this goal yet. Hopefully this will happen in 2011, but for almost 30 years, you could almost say that the internet has been illegal in Europe, because in fact, these standards have had some sort of a pariah status. They have been used, but they haven't actually been recognized. But of course, national governments have seen this already, and famously, the UK, I think a couple of weeks ago, made a procurement note where they specified that these standards should, of course, also be included. Okay, so then we get to the issue of procurement. This is important, I think, to you, because no law or policy that doesn't get actually implemented is very interesting. I mean, it's a theoretical concept, and that can be important in the long term. But it would also be nice if it has consequence on the kinds of IT systems you start procuring or buying. And there, I think we have two messages. Yes, governments are incredibly important, and you do set the tone for what will happen, because you are a large customer. But one government cannot change the entire standardization world. And it is equally important for you to act as a customer and tell us or tell standards organizations your requirements as opposed to just mandating things. And we see this in many countries. You can, of course, shape the direction of a market. But if you want to have a positive effect on actual standards, you need to also engage with them. So we have taken one such initiative called the PITS initiative, to create more awareness among everybody, including vendors, because we are also not perfect in this domain. We need to understand how to write responses to tenders that are better for you. But also public procurers need to have more awareness of interoperability and standardization when they write tender documents. So this is important. In fact, there are studies that show almost a quarter, 25% of tenders across Europe were naming inappropriately brand names or products when they should have talked about standards or functional requirements. And this creates a situation where there is lock-in to these particular brands and products. It has to be said, in some cases, it was our own company that was mentioned. So when we you know, see this study, and in fact, we are part of the organization that issued this study, we had to take some heat on that as well. But in the long run, I think it's worth it, because we are not big enough that we could have the monopoly on the whole world, so we are best served by fairness. Finally, before my conclusion, the two proposals, and I'm not going to comment on them in detail because that would be unfair, and also it's not something we typically do. We don't want to take party sides in an ongoing debate, but they do rightly emphasize open standards, and that's the main point. They are very to the point, and they explain, both of them, that interoperability is directly linked to open standards. So I would encourage you in the further process not to forget that link. Whatever happens to the political initiative resulting in the law, interoperability is deeply tied to open standards. And then all the rest will follow. There are, of course, complications, but this is the main point. But also remember that there are open standards that do include IPR. And I would say it's not the main problem is not the presence of intellectual property rights. It is how those are handled. And it's not the case that, you know, the citizen or the government always bears the price of the cost of IPR. Sometimes it's basically just the vendor community that you know, are exchanging these costs in between themselves. So the main problem, really, in this debate is to distinguish between technologies that are talked about as standards. Or, well, firstly, that there are many technologies that are not standardized at all. And those, obviously, you know, you have to basically go with them or not. They can't communicate with other technologies. And in some cases, it's okay. But in areas where there is a lot of, you know, many systems need to work together, this is a problem. There are also technologies that are somewhat standardized, but not fully standardized. So it's important to make sure that you describe exactly what a standards process is. And then in the end, there are also standards where the product has been standardized in a fairly open process around the table. Everybody has said, you know, what they needed to say. But in the end, it isn't implemented in any products. That is also not a very open standard. It is open in principle, but it is not open in practice. So my conclusion is for today that be aware that any individual government cannot fully regulate, of course, a global marketplace. This is sad for you. It's sad for us. It's sad for everybody to realize, you know, there are some limitations to one's power, right? But deeply engaging and engaging with standardization is very fruitful, and it's something industry wants more of. We want more governments to understand standardization and to say, as a user of technology, this is what we want. So this is goodness. Secondly, governments should encourage what's called ex-ante disclosure, basically knowing whether a technology is going to be, you know, if you're going to charge for a technology in a standard or not, early. And you do have a sphere of influence in many standards bodies, and you should exert that influence and let them know that these types of policies are generally very, very good. And finally, government authorities should adopt open standards policies, establishing a clear preference for open standards. And this is very positive, and it seems that Portugal is going in this direction, and we applaud this. So I think I'll just end with a little image so you can see the variety of organizations we are talking about. And this is just a small slide, but these are some of the organizations that, you know, on a day-to-day basis help us and other companies develop standards. And with that, I'm happy to take questions or comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Trondar. Eu dava agora a palavra aos deputados. Não sei se o Sr. Deputado Michel Zoifer, CDS-PP.
Por acaso não. Não sei. Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Por uma questão de facilidade, se calhar dirigia-me em inglês, se os colegas não sei. Muito bem. Então vou manter-me em português e gostaria de cumprimentar os representantes da Oracle e o Dr. Trond Undheim e dizer-lhes que este problema esta questão das normas abertas tem, por iniciativa do Bloco e do PCP, tomado a nossa atenção, e algumas das coisas que aqui foram ditas têm sido, de facto, as questões à volta das quais o nosso grupo de trabalho tem resolvido atuar. Tanto esta questão da propriedade intelectual, como uma questão que aqui não foi falada, mas que tem que ver com o facto de nós obrigarmos o Estado a manter uma única norma por área funcional, quer na parte da interoperabilidade, como na parte do contacto direto com o cidadão. São questões que nós temos aqui discutido com alguma profundidade. Eu devo dizer que aquilo que aqui nos disse hoje, de que há standards que utilizam propriedade intelectual e que deixar esses standards de fora deixa muitos importantes standards de fora, ou normas de fora, é algo que me preocupa. E, portanto, se quisesse dar aqui alguns exemplos de normas que, ainda sendo abertas, utilizam propriedade intelectual, eu creio que isso ajudava ao nosso debate. Uma questão que eu creio que nos trouxe aqui, não sei se pela primeira vez, é esta questão das normas europeias estarem reguladas por um corpo de organizações que acaba por abranger muito poucas normas ou muito poucos standards. Nós já tínhamos falado aqui há dias do AIF, mas aqui o ETSI e o CNELEC ainda não tinham vindo aqui à baila, mas nós de qualquer maneira iríamos sempre optar, creio eu, por uma definição na nossa lei do que é uma norma aberta e não necessariamente de, apesar disso já ter sido proposto, de passar para uma entidade europeia essa mesma definição. E é isto, então. Eu terminava, portanto, com aquela questão que lhe deixei, de podermos aprofundar um bocadinho a questão da propriedade intelectual, se achasse conveniente. Obrigado.
Sr. Deputado Bruno Dias, PCP.
Eu quero saudar mais uma vez o Sr. Trondar Nunheim e os senhores representantes dos nacionais portugueses da Oracle, Vítor Rodrigues e Paulo Folgado. De facto, estando nós num processo legislativo para todos os efeitos formal, cujo registro e gravação das reuniões implica alguma formalidade política e legislativa, embora pudéssemos todos falar no latim do século XXI, que é o inglês, politicamente é um sinal o facto de optarmos por falar português na nossa reunião. Agradeço a apresentação que nos fez e o testemunho e a reflexão que nos trouxe. Esta é uma matéria que como nós tivemos a ocasião de dizer na sessão plenária do Parlamento, é muito mais importante do que para a maior parte das pessoas poderá parecer à primeira vista. E quando, nesta altura, nós estamos a trabalhar na especialidade, como até do ponto de vista legislativo se refere, estamos a discutir na especialidade os projetos e a construir um texto comum para ser a lei portuguesa nesta matéria, estamos de facto a tratar de duas ou três questões principais que ainda exigem clarificação e consolidação do texto legal, e uma delas é de facto, uma dessas questões é de facto a definição do que é uma norma aberta, do que é um open standard. Quando nós optamos por consolidar no texto legal nacional essa definição, corremos menos riscos relativamente à instabilidade legal, desde que essa definição legal seja estável e ampla suficientemente. E é por isso que, no caso do nosso projeto de lei do PCP, apontámos muito para uma base próxima do quadro europeu de interoperabilidade que na altura existia, porque o nosso texto legal, portanto, os nossos artigos foram redigidos em 2008, quando ainda não tínhamos o quadro europeu 2.0, digamos assim, a nova versão do quadro de interoperabilidade, mas na minha opinião, na nossa opinião, digamos que o quadro europeu de interoperabilidade não melhorou muito da primeira para a segunda versão. Esta é a nossa análise. E, portanto, quando se trata da preocupação do pagamento de royalties por uma norma, e não estamos a falar de uma solução de software, estamos a falar de um standard, que pode ou não ser implementado num produto ou numa solução. E às vezes existe essa confusão nos debates que temos. Repito, a questão da royalty como critério, e o segundo critério polémico, a questão mais ampla e amontante dos direitos de propriedade intelectual, a nossa preocupação é precisamente o que irá acontecer no futuro, mesmo quando existe a possibilidade da revelação ex ante das políticas, o ex ante disclosure que o senhor falava e que é importante. E, portanto, esta segurança ou insegurança sobre o futuro quanto à abertura das normas é aquilo que nos leva a suscitar, a levantar a questão dos direitos de propriedade intelectual e das royalties e sobre o que isso poderá significar para esse standard e tudo o que dele dependerá para a sociedade e para o Estado. Nesse sentido, eu gostava de deixar este apontamento, este comentário, que é ao mesmo tempo uma questão sobre o que tem acontecido ou o que pode acontecer relativamente a esta situação quando não existe total previsibilidade ou revelação ex ante das políticas em relação a isso. Para terminar, a outra questão tem a ver com um aspecto que me pareceu muito importante, entre outros, da sua apresentação, que é a ideia de que se um standard não é usado de uma forma generalizada, ele na verdade não é bem um standard. Isto eu penso que pode ser relacionado com o problema ou com a questão de haver um standard ou mais do que um standard para determinada área funcional. Esteve em Portugal há pouco tempo o Sr. Peter Strix, do FEDICT da Bélgica. E ele lembrou aquela série de ficção passada na Escócia que dizia "There can be only one. In the end, there can be only one." E isso significava que pode haver mais do que um standard, mas se o standard de facto for só um, então o outro é uma ficção. E nós estamos a regulamentar ou a legislar de uma forma que não é relevante e que até pode trazer distorções relativamente à realidade. E isso, essa ideia que nos trouxe na sua intervenção, Sr. Undheim, levou-me a ficar um pouco mais convicto ainda desta ideia de que pode ser necessário e importante definir que standard deve ser só um, até para garantir uma interoperabilidade mais efetiva. E eu gostava de ouvir o seu comentário sobre isso. E peço desculpa pela demora. Procurei também falar um pouco mais devagar, mas termino por aqui. Obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Agora, Sr. Deputado Pedro Filipe Soares, do Bloco de Esquerda.
Muito boa tarde. Cumprimentar-vos pela vossa presença e pela reunião que pediram, no fundo, para se envolverem neste processo legislativo e conhecendo parte da prática da Oracle, particularmente relativo à Sun e ao seu Open Office, percebemos que há trabalho na matéria de relevar e à qual não nos passa à parte. Não é por acaso que os dois projetos de lei, no seu preâmbulo, também referem o ODF como um standard para documentos de texto, por isso estamos atentos ao que se vai passando. Nesta fase do debate em especialidade, já há uma série de questões que foram ultrapassadas e por isso é muito difícil estarmos a tentar fazer perguntas novas quando as perguntas necessárias já foram colocadas. Não vou por isso entrar nesse jogo, não temos necessidade de andar aqui a disputar a exposição, apenas e só cumprimentar-vos e colocar uma pergunta para além daquelas que foram colocadas, que é relativa à questão das exceções. Como foi dito e como nós temos conhecimento, não há standards abertos para todas as áreas funcionais, por isso as normas abertas não serão uma aplicação neste momento universal para todas as necessidades da administração pública. Mas como é que vocês têm visto a nível europeu e nos outros países a aplicação das exceções? Porque essa é uma preocupação que nós temos, para que a exceção não se torne uma regra. Não possa existir por aí um espaço de que uma política que visava a adoção de normas abertas, afinal, promova o continuismo de se recorrer a normas fechadas. E era esta a opinião que eu gostava de ouvir da vossa parte. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado. Sr. Deputado, dava agora a palavra a Mr. Trondar. To answer these questions.
So, thank you very much for these questions and comments. I just first like to say that I'm going to do some preliminary answers, but I hope that I can maybe come back if the answers are not completely clear. I can come back with some written answers if I didn't fully understand the question. So on the first question from Michel Seifert on the IPR issues and the importance of singles versus multiple standards in particular fields. I think on a general level, multiple standards are problematic, of course, in standardization. In an ideal world, we want one standard for each functional area and then for everybody to implement those. In a matter of practice, it's not so simple because IT technology evolves fast, and there are competing standards, there are also overlapping and slightly overlapping standards. So when we participate, you know, in hundreds and hundreds of standards development processes, that also means there are hundreds of standards that potentially could be important to us. But we have made the decision now not to invest in it and wait and see, and we will maybe jump on the train later. So these are decisions that each, you know, each vendor and people, stakeholders interested in standards have to make all the time. And we are not in the position of perfect knowledge. And you have to remember that a standards process can stall, it can be blocked, it can become, you know, inhospitable because, you know, it just gets logged up, and then another standard that maybe wasn't even better wins out. There are many situations like that in the history of standardization. So that is to say maybe two things. I agree, multiple standards is a problem. And in some fields, it is fairly certain what the answer is. And one such area, and I mentioned that earlier, is, and you mentioned it, is in the area of document formats. This is an area that has existed and has been stable for a long time. It's very clear what a document format should do. And even very simple citizens like me, in the role of citizen, I understand what it means to have a document. So in this case, I think it's fairly clear that having more than one document format that to edit and exchange documents doesn't make so much sense. However, in many other areas, it is not so easy to gamble on one standard as opposed to the other. And I would advise you to be quite careful in your interoperability frameworks, or in, I guess, this law wouldn't be in a framework itself, so you would be careful of mentioning individual standards. And there's a reason for that. Some standards, you know, survive and are timeless. Others turn out to, you know, be missed avenues and one-way streets. So it is difficult to handle the issue of multiple and overlapping standards. But in principle, you are, of course, right. In the ideal world, and I have to say, looking at this from a bird's eye view, we are involved in way too many standards, in way too many standards organizations. So if there was a way to simplify that, that would be wonderful. But as industry, it's also important to have flexibility. So at some point, if our technologies and our customers demand that our technologies do certain things and the available standards don't do it, then we hope we can have the flexibility to start a new standard and get other people on board. So I don't think it's something you can decide here and now to say we're picking one standard for each technology area. Even to say which areas should you pick standards in, that would be a very value-laden decision. So, you know, how many technology areas are there in software? How many are there in overall in IT? Is it 10? Is it 100? What is the ideal number of standards? But for areas with very, very important interoperability concerns, and I'm only going to use one example here, the document formats, I think it's pretty clear. And in that case, one should choose the standard that is the most open, the most widely available standard. On question two, from Mr. Deputato Bruno Diaz from PCP, you had some comments on the royalty-free aspects and some aspects on looking at the European interoperability framework. You made the comment it hadn't improved much in 4 years. So the difference between the two, of course, is that one document was not a formal European document. It was EIF version 1 coming from a member state committee. So these were bureaucrats from across Europe who agreed this is what we want to send as a message. This new document that was adopted in the fall is an actual communication from the European Commission. So those are, of course, different. And I was involved in those debates, and yes, it got very complicated. And some people would say it got a little watered out. And I would maybe be prepared to say that. On the other hand, it was a significant achievement, because even to agree anything about openness and interoperability across Europe is a very big achievement. So I think, yes. The concern about what happens in the future is largely what is at the core of my presentation as well. We just don't always know, and we have to make sure that our initiatives are sufficiently foresighted to address uncertain futures. I wanted to make one example, and it wasn't even my example. It was Vitor this morning who commented. And this goes back to when we were small, and I don't know about you, but when I was in school, the only thing you could wear was Levi's 501, right? Without it, no friends, no, certainly no girlfriends, and very little popularity. So the problem with that is, of course, that it was controlled by one vendor. There was one price, at least in my little hometown. There was only one price, and it was much higher than my mother was willing to spend. Now, what were we really discussing? We were discussing jeans. We weren't really discussing, you know, the functional requirement was something that fit, you know, on top of your underwear that could basically perform certain functions, i.e. jeans. So the standard is jeans, and the product is Levi's 501. Now, a lot of things that has happened in that marketplace. I am not young anymore, but I have learned that there are now other brand names that are even more popular. But also, you know, the variety of jeans has increased. And why is this? It's because then there is now an understanding that even though there was a front runner who created the jeans for the cowboys in the US when they were still chasing cows, the concept has survived and has become more generic. And indeed, lots of different players can deliver. So I think that it's very important to keep in mind, and thank you very much for an excellent example. I think I'm going to stick to that. So on the third example from the question from Pedro Suarez from BE, you talk also about the exceptions and ODF and whether there are how to deal with the fact that there aren't standards, open standards available for all areas, and whether exceptions should be a rule or how to avoid exceptions becoming a rule. Again, I have no magic wand to tell you how to avoid that exceptions become a rule, but you can, of course, establish a direction. And this is where I say that it is really in the procurement side that you can control this. It is really the awareness of procurers that the ideal should always be to go with an open initiative, an open standard. And even if an open standard is not available, there are things that customers and clusters of customers can do to stimulate the development of such standards. And government is in a very good position. It is not the case, I think, that governments need to be thinking of themselves just as regulators and neutral in this debate. You are also stakeholders. You are customers of standards. So you need to engage in standards. It would not be a problem if, you know, the Portuguese or any other government said, we want to create standard X. And then you try to make that happen. Of course, it's difficult to create a standard. One person cannot, or one organization cannot create a standard. You need to get everybody interested. But basically, that is my short answer. And the other is the importance of increasing awareness in procurement decisions among those who actually carry out the procurements. So keep that in mind when you, you know, want to act in this area. And if you have something smart there, you will be a front runner in Europe and maybe even internationally.
Thank you very much. Mais alguma questão? Não. Eu prometi-me pedir se fosse possível fazer chegar esta apresentação. It's a presentation for our working group. It's very important. You can send us this presentation, right? Well, eu resta-me agradecer a presença da Oracle, nomeadamente do seu Trond Arne, and wish you a good job here and a good time in Portugal. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And can I just say that I need to check if I can make an exception with my lawyers. I'm not authorized to share these now, and probably also after the discussion, maybe I want to put in a comment based on the questions. Okay. But I will have to double check so I don't get fired. Yes. Which is not a good thing.
Not at all.